Clouds of fog in Hamburg. Regarding the return of Nebelschwaden in Hamburg, there are conflicting stories. According to the museum, Liebruchs got in touch with the Hamburger Kunsthal to begin the process of returning Nebelschwaden by Caspar David Friedrich. Polaroid photos of the painting together with current newspapers prove that the offer was serious this time. The persons in possession of the painting demanded 1.5 million euros for its return, the attorney said, in addition to a transaction fee of 250,000 euros. In an arrangement with the Frankfurt state attorney, the Kunsthal's chief executive officer, Tim Christenmacher, gave the appearance of being interested in the offer, per his own statements. According to the Hamburger Kunsthal, the intermediary had been told that the museum wouldn't yield to extortion and that the painting couldn't be sold in the art market. Nonetheless, there was said to be a desire to maintain contact. Allegedly, the attorney reduced his demands repeatedly, ultimately asking only for 250,000 euros to reimburse his costs. As Liebruchs later related, when he had already taken possession of the painting in order to conclude the transaction, Kistenmacher demanded the immediate handover of the painting and threatened Liebruchs with civil litigation and criminal prosecution. Liebruchs provides a completely different version of the events. He himself had negotiated with the fence for the pictures and got him to reduce the demand to 500,000 euros. Next, Mr. Kistenmacher led him to understand that for half of that sum, he had lined up a donor. Soon after that, I notified the state criminal prosecutor and the Kunsthal that I was in possession of the painting. Kistenmacher told me that it would take a week to free up the money. When I called him 7 days later, he said that the donor was on vacation and couldn't be reached. Nonetheless, we agreed to meet to exchange the money and the painting on a Monday. But over the weekend, I got a fax from Kistenmacher saying that his donor had abandoned him and he didn't know what to do. Right away, I called the state prosecutor and the AXA insurance company and said that I wanted to give up the painting, but they refused to accept it. Shortly later, a fax came in from the Hamburg legal office that threatened me with criminal sanctions if I did not return the painting immediately. Simultaneously, the Frankfurt state attorney was asked to search my home, but the request was turned down. Next, I called Hamburg and drove to the Schirn with a colleague. In front of the building, I called the director of the Schirn on my cell phone and handed over the Caspar David Friedrich painting. The Hamburg Kunsthal hailed the return of its stolen picture in a press conference on August 28, 2003. Nothing was said that day about the role the museum had played in the return of the painting. The Kunsthal had already dispersed the insurance payment for the theft so that it didn't have to forfeit the money to the city treasury. The break-in at the Bode Museum and the gigantic gold coin. On Mondays, the Bode Museum in Berlin is closed, but that didn't stop three visitors. They weren't looking for the main visitor's entrance. On March 27, 2017, at exactly 3 o'clock in the morning, they climbed the steps to the entrance of the nearby Hackeschermarkt train station. All three dressed in black, with hoods pulled over their faces to conceal them from the surveillance cameras, but as if already weighed down by guilt. One of the figures kept putting his hand in front of his face. On the video, the hand looks very white, probably clad in gloves. During the week, there aren't any trains so early in the morning. The station platform was empty, and the men strode determinedly toward its end. One of them, carrying a black backpack, had an unusual gait. A limp? Some physical tic? Or was something concealed in the leg of his trousers? The men jumped from the train platform onto the tracks and walked along them across the Spree River to the museum island. There, where the tracks led between the monumental buildings of the Pergamon Museum and the Bode Museum, was a strange extension. It was the remains of a bridge that once had risen above the train tracks and connected the Bode Museum and the Pergamon Museum. The bridge itself hadn't existed for a long time. It appears in historical photographs, but the three utilized the remains as a bridgehead. With the help of a ladder, they were able to reach a window in the Bode Museum. If they had shouted a loud hello, the police at Angela Merkel's nearby private home would have been able to return the friendly greeting. The three men weren't visiting for the first time. They knew exactly where they wanted to go. 10 days earlier, two had conducted surveillance on this way into the museum. And 6 days earlier, three people returned to survey, according to camera footage from the nearby train station. On the second visit, in the early morning hours of March 21, 2017, the culprits had already climbed up to the window and tried to remove a heavy piece of security glass that had been installed in 2005. They destroyed one of the bolts securing the glass, which was dislodged but held on by the remaining bolts. This part of the museum exterior had not been under video surveillance for some time. The object of their endeavors can probably be traced to a tip they got, possibly from a man who had been working at the Bode Museum for a few weeks as a watchman in the employ of a subcontractor. Somehow they learned about this fabulous treasure, a coin almost as big as a car tire, weighing 220 pounds, made of the purest gold in the world. Purity, 999.99 1/1000ths. A coin made of soft gold. Big Maple Leaf is the name of the coin. The Royal Canadian Mint hadn't exactly minted the coin, which would have been technically impossible, but rather milled it. Only six of them were made, and the two of the giant gold coins were sold on the open market. One copy is still in the possession of the Royal Canadian Mint, which is very proud to have been able to produce so large a coin of such purity. The gold is so fine and soft that it is unsuitable for making jewelry. Gold of this purity is principally used for the production of highly sensitive technology, such as for space travel. The Berlin Big Maple Leaf was exhibited on the third floor in a vitrine of bulletproof glass on loan from a real estate mogul in Düsseldorf. The man had bought the coin at auction in Vienna. There was only one bid. It was brought to the Bode Museum in Berlin for a special exhibition of the museum's coin collection, after it had first been displayed in the Kunsthistorisches Museum in Vienna. At the end of March 2017, the value of the raw material in it was itself about 4 million euros. Theoretically, one could also use the coin as payment in Canada, heaving it onto the counter at the cashier. The nominal value was 1 million Canadian dollars, a fraction of its actual worth. The director of the coin collection said later that the museum had wanted to use the giant coin to attract the part of the public who weren't regular visitors to the museum. His wish was fulfilled in unexpected ways. With an axe and a rollerboard. On that early morning in March, the three men opened the window in the facade above the bridgehead. The window led to a changing room for male employees, in which the presumed tipster had a locker. The alarm remained silent because it was the only window that was not connected to the external security system. The thieves cut through the remaining bolts that held the security glass on the window that they had earlier dislodged. At the precise time of the break-in, the night watchman made his rounds through the museum. Every 2 to 3 hours, he was supposed to walk through the museum, during which time the interior alarm system, the motion detectors, and the sensors on the doors were deactivated. For anyone watching the museum from the outside, the moment of deactivation would be made visible by the so-called guard light, dim lights that illuminate the museum from inside. It's possible that the burglars waited for these lights to go on before entering, or they listened in on the radio as the guard announced at 3:20 a.m. that he was about to make his rounds. The guard, 61 years old, toured the lower levels. He testified later that he suspected nothing and heard nothing concerning the visitors on the third floor who raced through the corridors, past historical art treasures, a marble Bacchus, paintings of Friedrich the Great, in the guise of a Greek hero, until they reached the room that held the gigantic coin. They could simply open the doors of the room in the direction of the coin because they were outfitted with a so-called panic function in case of fire. They would have needed a key for the way back, or they could have blocked the doors with plastic wedges. In the middle of room 243 stood the object that they sought. With a tomahawk brand axe, they hacked away at the vitrine. With so much force that they broke not only the 10-millimeter thick security glass, but also the fiberglass-reinforced handle of the axe. In the Green Vault in Dresden 2 years later, thieves also utilized an axe. When the lone coin was installed in the museum in 2010, it took 4 workers to carry it on a stretcher. The vitrine was protected by security glass, but without an alarm. The weight of the coin itself was supposed to prevent theft. The culprits were strong enough. They heaved the coin onto a dolly, a simple board with wheels, and pushed it through the hallways back to the window through which they had climbed into the museum. They left traces of their heavy load everywhere, crashing into walls and doorways. When the guard went to reactivate the alarm at 4 a.m. sharp, following his rounds, the system reported an error. Some doors on the 3rd floor appeared not to be properly closed. The guard, who had just been assigned to the Bode Museum and previously had served at other places in the museum collective, Stiftung Preußischer Kulturbesitz, called into the central security office, and when he went on another round through the museum, he discovered the plastic wedges blocking the doors. At 4:33 a.m., 2 additional guards arrived to help, and together they searched the building. One of them at last saw the smashed vitrine. It wasn't until 5:28 a.m. that an emergency call notified the police, who arrived at the crime scene minutes later. The police suspected that the culprits might still be inside the museum. Additional units were called in to search the entire building. Only when one of the policemen who entered first read the text on the smashed vitrine, which emphasized the weight of the coin, did the magnitude of the theft become clear. The police discovered the broken window in the changing room. Of course, the thieves had long since escaped. From the window, the coin was dropped into a wheelbarrow on the train tracks. The police found traces of gold and transported in the direction of the Heckschermarkt station. Later, a train conductor reported that he had noticed the wheelbarrow on the track bed a few days before the break-in. As investigators reconstructed the crime, the thieves steered clear of the station platform on their return trip. They threw the coin off the track just before they got to the station, dropping it into the Montbijou Park, which lay below. Traces of gold were also found there. The burglars used a rope to descend, probably the same rope employed earlier to raise the wheelbarrow and the other heavy equipment up onto the tracks. At 3:52 a.m., the surveillance camera at a nearby construction site shows a car driving away on the pedestrian walkway along the Spree River. The driver kept his headlights off. Because of the distance, further details cannot be seen. There were no eyewitnesses and no other video cameras. Even the bloodhounds that were brought in couldn't find a scent. A criminal act by a Philistine? It was one of the most attention-getting museum thefts in all of criminal history, a case reported in television news across the entire world, and in newspapers, including the New York Times. So where is the coin, and who stole it? One could call the criminals a bunch of Philistines because, to the great good fortune of the art world, they left the important cultural holdings of the Bode collection, such as the statue of Luke the Evangelist that Tilman Riemenschneider carved in wood, or the Baroque satyr with a panther that Pietro Bernini chiseled in marble, and the dancer by Antonio Canova. Instead, they wanted the gigantic coin, something straight out of Scrooge McDuck's cartoon dreams, a toy for very rich show-offs. The coin may not have been the most valuable object in the museum, but the thieves' choice wasn't exactly stupid either. Gold can be turned into money much more easily than a one-of-a-kind historical art relic, whose origin is known to experts and can be entered into search lists and databanks. Unlike a famous painting, a gold coin has only to be sawed through and melted down into easily transferable bars. Art was not the object of the crime in this case. The museum just happened to be the place where an especially large lump of gold was housed. If one wanted to call it an art crime, then perhaps it's possible to do so because of the simplicity of the theft. The crime itself seems like a work of minimalist art. Not only had the burglars made a lot of money very quickly, they also became instantly famous. They were sung about in rap videos and celebrated on the streets of Berlin. Rumors flew through the internet about who could have been involved in the break-in. and the state criminal investigators began the chase. Suspicious museum flyer and tips from confidants. Fairly soon, a policeman reported that a few weeks before the break-in, he noticed something peculiar. After the theft of gasoline from a filling station involving a car with a stolen license plate, he searched the car of the suspect. The young man had left behind a flyer from the Bode Museum with some handwritten notes. He was not unknown to the police. The investigators discovered that a few weeks before the break-in at the Bode Museum, he had begun to work there as a temporary guard, employed by a firm subcontracted to provide security. His locker was located in the changing room where the culprits climbed in through the window and later escaped with the coin. The man was put under surveillance. His telephone was tapped. The officers listened in as the suspect spoke with his friends and relatives about buying a coffee shop or a kiosk. Confidential informants provided other clues to the police. Allegedly, according to the tips, young members of a large family were involved, a family that was familiar to the police. They came from the Malakhmi, which is today part of Turkey. Their ancestors had fled to Lebanon and then to Berlin during the Lebanese Civil War. Today, most members of the family are innocent German citizens. One runs a smoking lounge and is active as the manager and bodyguard of well-known Berlin rappers. Other relatives are frequently mentioned in connection with criminality. One member of the family, a man just under 30 years old, along with a couple of accomplices, had entered a bank in the Berlin neighborhood known as Mariendorf and stolen the contents of approximately 300 strongboxes. The take? Jewelry, gold, and cash worth 9 million euros. To cover their tracks, they set the crime scene on fire. A member of the family was injured and left blood at the scene. He was arrested in the airport in Rome and, after a lengthy legal procedure, sentenced to 8 years imprisonment. The millions in loot remained missing. The suspects who were named by the police informants in the case of the stolen gold coin are relatives of the imprisoned bank robbers, and the young man who worked as a guard at the Bode Museum had gone to school with one of them. At least they seemed to be acquainted. The investigators were able to piece together a possible sequence of events that also convinced the examining judge. The raid in Neukölln and a long trial. 3.5 months after the break-in at the Bode Museum, the raid took place. 300 police, almost all officers of the LKA-4, a task force for organized crime, and a special attack commando, simultaneously searched several residences and presumed hiding places across Berlin, starting at 6 a.m. on July 12, 2017. Other search warrants were issued during the day, including for a jewelry store where a portion of the coin might have been sold. In all, 30 properties were inspected, and the police took 4 men into custody, all of them between 18 and 20 years old. They seized 4 rifles, a low 6-figure euro deposit slip, and 5 cars. But they didn't find the coin. Only tiny traces of it were later retrieved from a car and on the clothing of one of the men arrested. The suspected culprits are thought to be part of a criminal clan, the prosecuting attorney announced subsequently regarding her investigation. A year and a half later, in January 2018, the prosecution of the 4 accused began in the monumental building that houses the old criminal court in Moabit, the biggest criminal court in Europe. A media deluge accompanied the trial, with journalists from around the world. In the hallway outside the large courtroom 700, the accused held magazines or file folders with eye holes in them in front of their faces. One used the magazine Wissen und Staunen, Knowledge and Amazement, as his protective shield. Standing before the juvenile chamber of the Berlin State Court, the accused looked healthy and were respectably clothed. Some of them had sat in jail for months after the raid, but now all of them were free. One of them was a student at a technical university. 2 were in high school or training programs. One of them worked as a driver for a courier service. They avoided any appearance of arrogance or menace, looking with wide open eyes into the audience and at the judge in the grand courtroom with its old-fashioned wood interior. The defense attorneys argued that in spite of the immense investigative work of the detectives, there was no real proof of the involvement of their clients. The investigation was one-sided. The watchman at the museum had been eliminated as a suspect too early. Because he was near the coin on the night of the crime, he would have heard the vitrine being smashed. The attorneys didn't want to speak to the press during the trial. They had no comment when asked about the proceedings. In the indictment, the prosecutor relied upon the traces of DNA that had been found on the rope that hung from the train tracks after the crime. Moreover, some of the accused had searched the internet for current gold prices. During the raid, the police had found in an apartment belonging to one of the accused a piece of paper, which the investigators from that point on referred to as the gold note. On it were written various numbers of grams and sums that corresponded to gold prices, according to the prosecution. Although photography is strictly forbidden in the museum, the presumed insider had taken selfies of himself in the museum. His head is visible, along with the path the thieves had to take with the gold coin. His DNA was found, according to the state's attorney, in a so-called mixed sample on the window through which the criminals had entered. Had the young man been trying only to get some fresh air into the changing room after he had finished work? Or had he informed the criminals about the entrance and prepared the way? An expert opinion had been commissioned from a professor from Mittweida, Germany, for a so-called bioforensic picture identification, which compared the sizes of the suspects with the movements of the men seen in the surveillance footage, using software that is otherwise employed in the film industry to produce special effects. The 9 defense attorneys, among them one of the most famous criminal attorneys in Berlin, performed well at the trial for their clients. Witnesses and experts were shredded in cross-examination, and tiny details of their statements pulverized, such that at the end of questioning, as for example with the movement analysis of the professor, only vague probabilities remained. There were constant postponements. On February 20, 2020, the verdict was finally announced. The oldest defendant was acquitted, the tipster sentenced to 3 years and 4 months, and the 2 family members convicted of burglary to juvenile sentences of 4 years and 6 months each. In addition, the tipster was fined 100,000 euros, and the other 2 convicted burglars were fined 3.3 million euros, the gold value of the coin. According to the judge, there may have been other people involved in the crime. The defense lawyers of 2 of the convicts appealed the verdict, which was still pending when this book went to press. Besides the DNA traces at the scene of the crime, the purity of the gold turned into a problem for one of the defendants. Since gold of the purity 999.991-thousandths is extremely rare, commercially available gold coins and jewelry haven't been that pure in quite some time. Gold dust was found on gloves and a jacket at the home of one of the presumed perpetrators. His DNA clung to the rope that was left behind at the crime scene. Traces of gold were also found on the back seat of a Mercedes-Benz in the perpetrator's social circle. The hope of finding the coin in one piece has all but vanished. A chemist who testified as an expert at trial was able to positively identify the gold traces that were found as the same material that was used by the Canadian Mint to produce the big maple leaf coin, principally because of the very small silver content in the substance. The expert relied on microscope photography to prove that the particles found by the police showed noticeable deformations, evidence of grinding, as would arise in the process of cutting something apart. In the courtroom, he fascinated the judges, the accused, and the spectators by explaining that refining gold had been introduced under King Croesus in the 6th century BCE. And since the Berlin theft, there's now a much heavier gold coin. The Perth Mint made the Australian Kangaroo 1-ton gold coin, weighing 2,200 pounds. One of the accused massaged his neck during the disclosure of this information. The cultural and political scandal. The break-in at the Botha Museum wasn't some foreordained, unavoidable event. The governing body in control of the institution, the Staatliche Museen zu Berlin, had made it too easy for the thieves, whoever they were, the investigations by the police and prosecuting attorney concluded. It was determined shortly before the trial that since 2013 or 2014, The responsible persons in the museum knew about a broken alarm sensor on the window that the thieves used for their entry and exit. It wasn't repaired in the following years, and not even when the damage to the exterior security window was discovered after the first attempted break-in. At the trial, the head of security for the Staatliche Museen zu Berlin testified that he had assumed that the damage to the window was caused by a stone thrown from a passing train. The person responsible for security at the museum on the night of the crime said that there was another problem. For years, it had been scarcely possible to find suitable personnel. The inadequate security procedures are the scandal behind the theft, especially if one considers the cultural and historical damage that could have occurred in a more ambitious robbery. Even the big maple leaf had a cultural historical value, which was destroyed when the perpetrators and their henchmen presumably cut it into pieces. The remaining 5 gigantic Canadian coins became more valuable through this act of destruction. Now they are rarer, and rarity, as well as a good story, are often two of the most important factors that determine value, according to the art market's idiosyncratic rules. The Meltdown Mobs versus Art. The theft of the gigantic gold coin is part of a trend in art criminality that is interested only in the raw materials out of which the art is made. In December 2005, Henry Moore's 2-ton bronze sculpture, Reclining Figure, was stolen from the Moore Foundation in Much Haddam, England. The perpetrators brought a flatbed truck to disassemble the sculpture and transport it to a warehouse where it was sawed apart. Later, the pieces of the sculpture are presumed to have been shipped via Rotterdam to China by a junk dealer in Essex. Bronze is increasingly sought after by the electronics manufacturers there. The value of the work of art was estimated to be £3 million. The thieves were paid about £1,500 by the junk dealer. Ian Leith of the British Public Monuments and Sculptures Association told The Guardian in 2009 that the theft of public sculptures had increased an astonishing 500% in just 3 years. The problem of meltdown mobs plagues not only Great Britain but also Germany, where more and more art is stolen to be melted down. René Allange, the head of the art division of the State Office of Criminal Investigation for Berlin, says 5 to 10 artworks are removed from public spaces in Berlin each year. For example, The Swimmer by the German Democratic Republic artist Gertrud Klassen, which a thief took from the Treptow area and sold to a junk dealer for €184.80. Or Large Reclining Figure by Siegfried Kropp, which disappeared from a park in Obersee. The Ohlsdorf Cemetery in Hamburg is favored by thieves of non-ferrous metals. Here it was determined that thieves absconded with a nearly 6-foot-tall statue of Venus in the Shell and a fountain by the artist Auguste Moreau. At the same cemetery that year, a 250-kilogram bronze lion disappeared from the family grave of Karl Hagenbeck, the founder of the Tierpark Hagenbeck Zoo in Hamburg. The police believe that the thieves used a light truck and that the purpose was to sell the raw metal. The November 2019 theft of valuable jewelry with precious stones from the Green Vault in Dresden fits this pattern. Here as well, the thieves were probably interested only in the material value of the stones. The cultural value was presumably of no importance. A few weeks earlier, there had been an attempt to steal the gold treasures from the State Museum in Trier, Germany, which failed because the vitrines didn't yield. The Berlin numismatic collection was, incidentally, the victim of thieves a long time ago, but they didn't melt down their loot, and precisely because of that, they were convicted in the end. This burglary, as is so often the case, was an inside job. In 1718, in the Berlin palace where the coin collection resided at the time, the castellan, Valentin Runk, and the courtsmith, Daniel Stief, stole 176 gold coins, in addition to jewelry and other precious items. The overseer of the royal collection, the librarian Mathurin Vessier-Lacroze, knew they were guilty when he searched them and recognized specific coins in their possession. The second time as farce. The theft of Maurizio Catalan's gold toilet. As Karl Marx once put it, in reference to a proposition by Hegel, important world historical events always happen twice, the first time as tragedy, the second time as farce. 2.5 years after the break-in at the Bode Museum in Berlin, thieves in England took a different work of art made of pure gold, which, like the gigantic coin, weighed 100 kilograms, actually 3 kilograms more. People had waited in long lines, day after day, to use this work of art. A new form of the sublime was to be experienced. On the toilet that the artist Maurizio Catalan had installed in the Guggenheim Museum in New York in 2016. The once-in-a-lifetime chance literally to shit on pure gold. About 100,000 visitors took the opportunity before the end of the exhibition in 2017. More than 100 kilograms of 18-karat gold were needed to produce the fully functional copy of a typical American flush toilet, complete with the operational handle. Catalan's sculpture, titled America, which naturally evoked many associations, could be considered one of the most important markers of avant-garde art, just like Marcel Duchamp's 1917 exhibition of a urinal. The original urinal has disappeared without a trace, though there are several copies that were made later. The gold toilet went missing in September 2019, shortly before the opening of an exhibition at Blenheim Palace near Oxford. The burglars approached in the early morning hours on Saturday and ripped out the toilet bowl, apparently without any training in plumbing, since they caused water damage in the palace. The estate has belonged to the family of Winston Churchill for 3 centuries. The toilet art had been installed right next to the room in which the Prime Minister had been brought into the world. Of the artwork, only a gold pipe with the flush handle remained. The perpetrators probably came with 2 vehicles, the police believe. A 66-year-old man was arrested as a suspect, but set free on bail. Sometime later, 4 further suspects were identified. Unlike in the case of the theft of the gigantic coin, nothing here suggested that employees of the museum were involved. Some of my work has been damaged or thrown out by mistake, but I have never had to endure the loss of an artwork like this, said Catalan, who was born in Padua, Italy in 1960. Many of his friends suspected him of the deed. At first he thought it was a prank. I always liked detective films. Now I'm in one myself. Are the people who stole this work of art the true artists? Considering the speed with which they carried out the burglary, they are certainly great performers. The toilet, which belongs to the Marion Goodman Gallery in New York, is worth $6 million, much more than the $4 million in gold that went into making it. Crafting it in a Florentine foundry had been a highly complex and expensive endeavor. In addition, there's the artistic value that the object has acquired. When President Trump asked for the loan of a painting by Vincent van Gogh from the Guggenheim Museum for his private quarters in the White House, the head curator found that the painting could not be spared. The counteroffer to install Catalan's gold toilet for the president didn't generate interest from the White House. If the thieves were smart, they would have done well to act as iconoclasts and melt down the toilet right away. According to the state prosecutor's office in Berlin, that's what the perpetrators did with the 100-kilogram gold coin. Some of the old master paintings at Blenheim Palace probably have a greater market value than America. But then again, it's hard to anonymously and expeditiously transform unique works of art into cash, as one can do quite readily with a lump of melted gold. Maurizio Catalan fervently hopes that his America has been spared the furnace. He said the thieves would do better to use it as a toilet. The last person to take that opportunity had apparently been Catalan, after the installation. As for the time of the theft, he said, he has an alibi.